Huntsville, Texas, November 17, 1877. Nathan was informed he had a visitor and taken to a small room where there was a barred window and one chair. A visitor could speak through the barred window, and Nathan quickly learned why the prison had allowed him to see this particular visitor. While he didn't know the man, he was very familiar with the famous Star in a Circle of the Texas Rangers.
Stone, you don't know me, but I know of you. I'm Captain Dillard from the Ranger Outpost in Houston. Yesterday, we received a telegram from a friend of yours in Washington, wanting a report on your whereabouts and circumstances.
That would be Byron Silver.
Yes. We were shocked to learn you had been sent here, and I wired Silver that the circumstances were suspicious. I informed him that if he did not conduct an investigation, we would. Here's his response.
His heart pounding, Nathan read the short message.
Now, I want you to tell me as quickly as you can how all this came about.
Nathan did so, and the captain listened carefully.
I'm inclined to believe you. Sheriff Littlefield doesn't want to talk about you. He's been commended for delivering a pair of bank robbers, and he wants to leave it that way. We're going to appeal your conviction, and if that's denied, we'll ask for a new trial. I'm sure Silver will want to talk to you about that.
Houston, Texas, November 19th, 1877.
Come in.
Sheriff Oscar Littlefield entered Captain Dillard's office and stood there looking at Dillard.
Captain, I understand that you and other parties intend to appeal the conviction of Nathan Stone, who's doing time at Huntsville for bank robbery. May I ask why?
We don't believe justice has been done. We believe you and the state of Texas have sent an innocent man to prison. We intend to appeal his conviction.
I don't happen to agree with you, Captain, and I intend to see that your appeal is denied.
Sheriff, I'm going to give you some advice. Do not interfere with Stone's appeal. I am asking you to back off.
And I'm refusing.
Have it your way. We can't make you back off, but by God, we can make you wish you had.
Beaumont, Texas, November 22nd, 1877. Arriving in Beaumont, Barnabas found a couple of hotel rooms. Then the trio went to a cafe, and Barnabas arranged to have Empty fed.
I feel guilty eating good food when Nathan may only have bread and water. Should we go to the prison and try to see him?
I don't think so. Silver will be here the day after tomorrow, and we should let him take the lead. Silver believes Nathan was railroaded into prison, and unless I'm reading him wrong, he'll have some plan. I'm sure we'll be allowed to see Nathan while we're here.
Then he won't be released anytime soon.
I fear that he won't. An appeal can take weeks or months, and there's a chance it will be denied. In that case, the court will have to be petitioned for a new trial. God only knows how long that will take.
The trio reached Houston the following day and went immediately to the Ranger outpost. Captain Dillard told them as much as he knew about Nathan's situation.
Captain, I'm glad you rode to the prison and spoke to Nathan. Now he knows that we know where he is and that something is being done toward his release.
I don't know who was the most surprised to see me, Nathan or the prison officials. Stone had not been mistreated, and after my visit, I don't think he will be.
I'm sure you'll want to talk to Silver first, but unless he has some objection, we'd like to know how the investigation will proceed and what it will seek to prove.
I can't see Silver having any objection to you being here, since he asked you to come. I can tell you this much. First, we'll appeal the conviction. Should it be refused, we'll demand a new trial.
And if that's refused?
It won't be. You have my word.
Slowly, Nathan became acquainted with the three prisoners who worked beside him in the prison laundry. Borg was the only survivor of a four-man gang that had attempted to steal a military payroll. It wasn't difficult avoiding the trio during duty hours, for conversation was forbidden. But they soon became Nathan's uninvited companions in the mess hall. Borg eyed Nathan curiously.
How long you in for, Stone?
5 years, for a robbery I had nothing to do with.
That near about the way it was with me. I didn't get my hands on a peso. They just plumb shot the hell out of us, and now I'm stuck here in this stinking hole.
His and Staggs looked at him. Staggs was feeling less than sympathetic.
My heart pumps rainwater for you, bucko. Me and Hez, we're here for life.
Speak for yourself. I ain't aiming to stick around that long. Stone, we're busting out of here.
I'm not. I'll stay here and do my time.
No, you're going with us.
How and when?
Saturday, at the end of the shift, we'll take both guards hostage, using them to get us out the gate.
We'll never make it. Count me out.
You're in, dammit, whether you like it or not. If word of this gets out, we'll know it come from you. You'll be a dead man.
Houston, Texas, November 24th, 1877. Byron Silver made it to Captain Dillard's office. He introduced himself as he met Vivian and Captain Dillard for the first time. He then turned to Barnabas and Bess McQueen and greeted them warmly.
The first and last time I was with you folks, I'd been shot, and I'm not sure the present circumstances are much better. I reckon we'd better make ourselves as comfortable as we can while Captain Dillard tells us what he's learned.
Based upon what I've learned, I have every reason to believe Nathan Stone has been wrongly imprisoned for a crime he didn't commit. I talked to him at length, and his story has a ring of truth. First, I'll tell you what Nathan told me, and then I'll tell you how they rushed him through a trial without presenting a shred of proof. Just flimsy circumstantial evidence.
Captain Dillard talked for 3/4 of an hour. When he ceased speaking, his companions remained silent for a moment. Barnabas was first to find his voice.
My God! Anybody who knows Nathan Stone can see this for the lie that it is. Nathan and Vivian have been working with me racing horses. He was going to San Antonio to get a pair of Indian-genneled horses I bought.
This is all so foolish. Why would Nathan risk his life and reputation stealing $10,000 he would have to split with 2 other men? He has $20,000 on deposit in a New Orleans bank. Honest money.
I've known Nathan for 10 years, and while his fast gun has forced him into some situations he would have avoided if he could, he would never take a dishonest dollar. I'd stake my life on that.
So would I.
I can add little to that. The Rangers know and respect him, and based on what I've learned, I believe we should appeal his conviction immediately.
Prepare the necessary papers, and I'll file them.
Here they are. They've been ready for 3 days.
We'll be here until a decision has been reached. How long do these things take?
Unfortunately, with Sheriff Littlefield opposing it, and with Judge McClendon siding him, it could take months.
And all that time Nathan has to remain in prison. Mr. Silver, is there no way he can be released while his case is being appealed?
Well, none that I know of. The first step toward freeing him is to appeal his conviction. And unless the appeals court overturns it, the conviction will stand. Should his conviction be upheld, then we can demand a new trial.
I don't mean to sound ungrateful, but how long will that take?
As long or longer than the appeal. Once a man is behind bars, the courts move slowly.
I can't remain here for more than a month. Captain Dillard, I'll have to depend on you and the telegraph to keep me informed. I'll arrange to be here if and when his appeal is heard, and for a new trial if there is one.
I may have given Nathan false hopes. I believe you should go to Huntsville and tell him we're appealing his conviction and that it's going to be long and drawn out.
I intend to. He also needs to know that if the appeal is unsuccessful, a new trial may take even longer.
Vivian, Bess, and I will go with you.
Huntsville, Texas, December 1st, 1877. Nathan's 3 companions were silent as to their intentions, but as their day began in the laundry, the trio's eyes were on him. Since he had no idea what Borg, Hez, and Staggs had in mind, he must wait for them to make their move, and then somehow foil their plan. As the end of the day drew near, Nathan found Borg constantly at his side, so it was no surprise that when the time came, Borg made the first move. In an attempt to distract the 2 guards, Borg tried to seize Nathan in a bear hug, but he wasn't quick enough. Nathan drove his right knee into Borg's groin. Borg collapsed like an empty sack. The 2 prison guards hadn't fallen for the trick. They remained where they were, their Winchesters covering Staggs and Hez. One of the guards pulled an alarm chain, bringing a prison official and 2 more armed guards. Nathan couldn't hear what was being said, but one of the original guards pointed to Borg. As the guards walked up, the prison official, whose name was Corrigan, spoke to the pair of guards who had accompanied him.
Take him to solitary. He jumped you? Why?
I don't know. He took me by surprise.
Starting Monday, you'll be assigned to kitchen duty. Guards, escort these men to the mess hall. Keep an eye on them until they have eaten, and then take them to their cells.
When Staggs and Hez had been taken away, Corrigan spoke to Nathan.
Stone, I was fast thinking. You prevented what I suspect might have become a nasty incident. Such an act will not go unnoticed.
Nathan said nothing. While he had won Corrigan's approval, his three former companions would regard what he had done as nothing less than betrayal. If he remained in the prison for any length of time, he had no doubt the trio would find a time and place to come after him with vengeance on their minds. Houston, Texas, December 3rd, 1877. Byron Silver, Vivian, and the McQueens met with Nathan in the prison. While he obviously was glad to see them, he seemed subdued and said little.
Captain Dillard told us what you've told him. Now why don't you tell us in your own words? Maybe you'll remember something you didn't tell him.
I doubt it.
Nathan repeated what he'd told Captain Dillard.
What I don't understand is what became of my horse.
Gruya, wasn't it?
Yes, not the only one by any means, but those fancy saddlebags had silver buckles and were made in Mexico. King Fisher gave them to me.
Well, that's something. From what Captain Dillard has learned, the sheriff's posse found no horses, and that means they must have been taken away by the pair of outlaws who escaped. I'll have the captain pass the word along to the rangers, and they'll all be watching for those saddlebags.
I appreciate everything that all you are doing for me, but I've been dealt a bad hand. Sheriff Littlefield accepted me as one of the bank robbers, no questions asked. The man who fired at me that I had to kill was shot at close range and from the front. Sheriff Littlefield testified that the two robbers who had been wounded were shot from behind. Two men escaped, taking two extra horses with them, one of which was mine. I can't believe Littlefield didn't find the tracks of four horses and couldn't see that only two of them were being ridden.
And that's just some of the things that don't add up. Captain Dillard thinks these and other things Sheriff Littlefield overlooked or dismissed may be used to overturn your conviction. If your appeal is denied, we're going to petition the court for a new trial, and we are going to destroy Sheriff Oscar Littlefield.
Couldn't happen to a more deserving old Brusardo, but petitions and appeals take time. How long am I likely to be stuck here?
I won't give you any false hope. Appealing your conviction can take as long as 6 months, with Sheriff Littlefield and Judge McClendon opposing it. If that falls through, it could take as long or longer to win you a new trial.
Damn. You can't stay here that long, can you?
No. I took a month's leave. However, I'll be in touch with Captain Dillard by telegraph, and he or some of the other rangers will be here to talk with you as often as they can. You won't be alone, and you won't be forgotten.
I'll stay here until you're free, Nathan, however long it takes.
I appreciate that, but it would serve no good purpose. Barnabas, I want you and Bess to go home, taking Vivian and Empty with you. Since I never made it to San Antonio, you can go there and get the horses I was supposed to bring you.
No, I'm staying with you.
I don't want you out here alone. There'll be horse races all over Arkansas, Louisiana, and Mississippi, and Barnabas had plans to enter Diablo in all of them. Didn't you, Barnabas?
Well...
Vivian, Barnabas, Bess, you can arrange for Captain Dillard to wire you information, just as he has promised to do for me. Nathan has the Texas Rangers on his side, and if anything should happen to him, the Rangers will raise hell and kick a chunk under it. None of you can do more than that.
He's talking sense. It's bad enough me being stuck here without the rest of you having to hunker around waiting for something to happen. If we have to go for a new trial, that'll be soon enough for you to return here.
Staggs and Hez avoided Nathan in the mess hall, but when they looked at him, the hate in their eyes was obvious. While Nathan wasn't unfriendly, he didn't go out of his way to make friends. It came as a surprise one Sunday morning in the mess hall when a slender man with dark hair, a hoarse face, and a lopsided grin sat down on the bench across the table.
You look like a gent that keeps his mouth shut and minds his business.
I try.
So do I. My name's Harden, John Wesley Harden. You must have heard of me, but nothing good, I reckon.
Not a single word. I'm Nathan Stone.
I've heard of you. Muy bueno with the pistol, so they say. How long you in for, if I ain't being nosy?
You are. I got 5 years for bank robbery.
I'll likely be here the rest of my life. My daddy named me after John Wesley, the preacher. He had hopes of me being a man of God, but I ended up working for the other side.
Nathan didn't like the turn the conversation was taking, and he changed the subject.
Well, after the day's work is done, what does a man do with himself in a place like this?
Speaking for myself, I generally head for my bunk after supper. I'm in the field from sun up to sundown, every man of us in leg irons.
We're watched by more guards than any other detail, and every guard's equipped with a shotgun. They all got orders that if shooting becomes necessary, shoot to kill. Sundays, now I generally go to the library after dinner.
What kind of books do you read?
Law. I've been raising hell since I was 10, on the outs with the law since I was 11, and now I'm 24. I aim to learn something about the law. Hell, if I ever get out of here, maybe I'll open me up a law office.
Houston, Texas, December 7th, 1877. Vivian and the McQueens were preparing to return to New Orleans. They were in Captain Dillard's office.
I'll stay on top of the situation here, and as soon as there's any change, I'll telegraph you.
I'll be here a while yet. After you shake the tree, it's interesting to step back and see what falls. I aim to see that Nathan's appeal makes it through the proper channels without delay.
I'm so glad, Mr. Silver. I don't feel so bad about us leaving with you and Captain Dillard in charge.
If I'm needed, all of you know how to reach me. Should I be away from Washington, any messages will be forwarded and I'll get back to you.
Twice a month, I'll either visit Nathan or send someone else. I will see that he knows we're working toward his release.
Huntsville, Texas, December 14th, 1877. The only time the prison inmates came together, except for work details, was in the mess hall. By the time Borg had been released from solitary, Staggs and Hez had begun a campaign to ostracize Nathan. When he sat down at the table to eat, others who were seated there got up and moved. Nathan countered their rejection by seating himself at an empty table. At the start of his third day of eating alone, John Wesley Hardin placed his tin tray on a table across from Nathan and sat down to breakfast.
I don't know what you got, but it must be contagious as hell.
It is. Borg, Staggs, and Hez tried to drag me into a jailbreak, and I didn't go along.
I heard about that. They're calling you a Judas to your own kind.
My kind, hell. If I wasn't trapped in here, I wouldn't squat and eat within 100 miles of any of this bunch.
My feelings exactly, amigo. And if I'm any judge of yellow coyotes, this bunch is working their way into a killing mood. I'd not be surprised if they all jump you sometime soon.
You're not making any friends.
Considering what I got to choose from, then maybe I don't want any. Present company accepted, of course.
My luck's taking such a rotten turn, they'll stomp hell out of me, and it'll be me that goes to solitary.
Nathan's prediction came together at supper time the day before Christmas. Hardin, who had continued to take his meals with Nathan, saw it coming.
This is it, amigo. Borg, Hez, and Staggs ain't got the sand to take their seats at our table, but every day they've been working their way closer. They're at the table next to us, and they'll try to take you in the thick of the fight. They're likely armed with makeshift knives.
Hardin, this is not your fight. There are other tables.
But none as interesting as this one. Somebody in the back of the hall will start the dance, but don't look for Borg, Hez, and Staggs to jump in immediately. We don't make our move until the whole bunch rushes us. Then we flip this table on its side and force them three bastards to come after us.
Damn it all to hell!
Suddenly, men surge to their feet, shouting, again throwing tin trays and cups.
It's time, amigo!
Nathan leaped to his feet and the two of them overturned the table. Then the unexpected happened. The two guards from the front of the mess hall dropped behind the overturned table, one at each end. Facing the ugly snouts of two shotguns, the surging men dropped back. Even Borg hesitated, but Hez and Staggs leaped the table. Each man had in his hand a piece of kitchen cutlery that he had hidden and honed for the occasion. Stepping aside, Nathan avoided Hez, seized his upraised arm, and slammed him to the hard floor face down. Nathan was on him in an instant, twisting his arm, forcing him to drop the knife. But Hardin hadn't been so fortunate, for Staggs had a weight advantage and the two were locked in a death struggle. The prison guards had the rest of the inmates under control, and the eyes of every man were on Hardin and Staggs. Suddenly it was all over, and Hardin got shakily to his knees. Staggs lay on his back, his own knife driven into his chest. One of the guards had Hez on his feet, his hands manacled behind him, as another guard went after Borg.
I didn't do nothing!
Like Hez, his hands were manacled behind him, and the two were led away by prison guards. Huntsville, Texas, April 5th, 1878. True to his word, Captain Dillard had kept in touch with Nathan Stone, taking him newspapers, an occasional word from Byron Silver and the McQueens. This day, however, the Ranger didn't relish the task that lay ahead. As soon as the prison guard led Nathan into the little room with its barred window, he sensed something was wrong.
Bad news, Captain?
I'm afraid so. Your appeal has been denied. I've petitioned the court for a new trial, and Silver's demanding a change of venue. He's going to act as your counsel before the court, and if he has his way, the trial will take place in Austin.
I have all the confidence in the world in Byron Silver, but do you really believe a change of venue will make any difference?
I most certainly do. Remember that bank teller who swore you were one of the bank robbers? At Silver's insistence, I backtrailed that young man. He is the son of a woman that Sheriff Oscar Littlefield was more than a little fond of a few years back, and it was our friend Littlefield who got the boy a job at the bank.
So, the bank teller might have helped Sheriff Littlefield look good at my expense.
Silver thinks so, and I agree. It's one of those things we can't prove beyond a reasonable doubt, but we don't have to. It's enough to blow Sheriff Littlefield's credibility to hell and gone. We're demanding a trial by jury, too. So that's the good news. You will definitely be granted a new trial. The bad news is, of course, we don't know how long you'll have to wait. It may take longer if we're granted a change of venue, but I believe it'll be worth the wait.
So do I.
St. Louis, Missouri, September 2nd, 1878. It was a dreary Sunday afternoon, and the rain came down in gray sheets, slashing at the windows of the little church Anna Tremaine had attended all her life. Now she lay in a coffin before the altar, soon to be lowered into a grave in the little churchyard beside her husband, John. As the minister droned on, young John Wesley Tremaine, not quite 12 years old, gritted his teeth and gripped the back of a pew with his hands. While he mourned the loss of Grandma Anna, his grief had been all but swallowed up by his anger. While his life without mother or father hadn't been ideal, it was about to become infinitely worse. He had been temporarily taken in by the minister and his wife, but only until arrangements could be made to send him to an orphanage. Finally, the service was over, and he was led into the drizzling rain among mourners who followed the coffin to the old graveyard behind the church. He watched them lower the coffin into the grave with no outward emotion. To young John Wesley Tremaine, tears were a sign of weakness, and in a world where he had continually fought for the dubious honor of a mother he had never known, he had dared not show anything but strength. He fought others who were stronger than he was, and when he arose, bruised and bloody, it was without a whimper. Now he took fierce pride in not having allowed them to see him weep, and he silently vowed that no orphanage was going to hold him for long. Somewhere he had a father, an elusive being who could supply those answers his mother and grandparents had taken with them to their graves. Each time Nathan stepped into the little visitor's room with its barred window, he studied Captain Dillard's face. Finally, on the first day of March 1879, the Ranger brought welcome news.
You've been granted a new trial, Nathan, along with a change of venue. Set for July 14th in Austin. Every ranger within riding distance will be there. I've already telegraphed Silver and the McQueens. You'll be leaving here on July 10th. Silver will be there ahead of you.
I want you there. You've kept me alive all these months.
God willing, I'll be there.
I can never thank you enough for all you've done.
You once did for Captain Sage Jennings what he was unable to do for himself. That's enough.
At the McQueen house, plans were being made.
There's a horse race in Beaumont, Texas on July 4th. I see no reason why we can't let Diablo win that race before we ride on to Houston.
It might be a way of cheering Nathan, and it's on the way.
Barnabas McQueen, you ought to share Diablo's winnings with Nathan. I believe Yuli would have gone on to great things had she lived, and now Vivian's never lost a race riding Diablo. You have Nathan to thank for bringing them to you.
I've never denied that, but he wouldn't have it. He can win plenty, just as he did in Little Rock.
Not on Diablo. He's made a name for himself, and there are no more 20-to-1 odds.
I reckon not. But that pair we brought from San Antonio should be ready by the time Nathan's free. We'll begin racing them when you think they're ready.
They're ready now, but I can't bring myself to leave Diablo for them.
Vivian, why don't you invite your brother for a visit? He never seen you ride, has he?
No, and I am going to invite him. He wants to be there for Nathan's trial. He can take the train to Kansas City or St. Louis and a steamboat to New Orleans.
Houston, Texas, July 5th, 1879. An hour before sundown, Harley and Vivian Stafford and the McQueens arrived. They rode to the ranger station, where Silver and Captain Dillard were about to go to an early supper.
I'm buying the steaks. Vivian rode Diablo to another big one, and we're all flush.
My God, the last thing I ever expected was to win 2,000 pesos on a horse, with my sister riding him. Well, I can remember her having saddle sores all the way from her knees to her...
Harley, can't we talk about something else, please?
Oh, sure, sure. Sorry.
Let's go eat. When I'm offered a steak, I just purely can't keep anything else on my mind.
When the meal was done, they spent some time over coffee, talking.
I don't even like to suggest this, but is there a chance we could lose? That Nathan won't go free?
There's always a chance, but in light of what I've learned, I'd call it slight.
Who are you going to question besides Sheriff Littlefield and the bank teller?
Except for one that's dead, I'll call every man that rode in that posse if I have to. But I don't expect it to come to that.
I haven't seen Nathan in more than 2 years. I'd like to ride to the prison and talk to him.
I'll go with you. Vivian, you want to come?
Yes, please.
You can tell him Bess and me will see him in Austin.
On July 9th, two prison guards escorted Nathan to Austin, and it was well after dark when they arrived. There were holding cells in the basement of the three-story brick courthouse, and Nathan was taken to one of them. Compared with the quarters at Huntsville, the cell was luxurious. A guard brought Nathan his supper, and he was barely through eating when the guard returned.
You have a visitor. They're usually not permitted at night, but he's your counsel. I'll have to lock you in, Mr. Silver.
That's perfectly all right. Is there a limit?
Nah, take as long as you like.
The guard locked the door, leaving Silver and Nathan alone.
Well, it's been a long time coming. Sorry we couldn't do it sooner.
I have no complaints. You did the best you could. If we win this, can it be removed from my record? I reckon I ought to be satisfied just getting out, but...
I know how you feel, and if I can prove you were wrongly convicted, then the state of Texas will owe you. The very least they can do is clean the slate. My God, if they need character references, you have every ranger in Texas on your side.
Well, don't sell yourself short. Your influence means a lot.
Well, I'm not sure the courts take me seriously. I'm a Texan, and we have a reputation for standing by our friends, even when they're guilty as hell.
Strange you should mention that. The only friend I had in Huntsville was John Wesley Hardin. He's reading all the law books in the prison library and claims he'll open a law office when he gets out.
He might just do that. Anytime you want a Texan out of the game, you'd better kill him. If you don't, he'll come after you with a club, if he can't get his hands on anything more lethal.
I guess all we can do now is wait until Monday.
That's it. I had no real reason for coming by tonight, except that I just wanted you to know we're all here. I doubt there'll be any visitors allowed over the weekend. I really don't expect the trial to take more than a day, unless there's something I've overlooked.
Austin, Texas, July 14th, 1879. With Byron Silver beside him, Nathan sat at the table for the defense. Twisting around in his chair, he surveyed the courtroom. Tears came to his eyes when he found three entire rows of seats occupied by men who wore the symbol of the Texas Rangers, the silver star in a circle. And there were other people he had met in his checkered career, and one of them was the infamous Ben Thompson. Another was King Fisher. The judge took his seat at the bench.
I am Judge Warnell Travis. This is a new trial with change of venue, with counsel for the defense seeking to overturn the prior conviction of Nathan Stone. The defense has requested trial by jury. Since this is a change of venue, the court is seeking to dispense with some of the formalities. 18 potential jurors are present. Does counsel for the defense or the prosecution have cause to strike any of these potential jurors?
None for the defense.
None for the prosecution.
Sterling Ackerman had been the prosecutor when Nathan had been convicted.
Bailiff, seat the first 12 men from the list of potential jurors.
The jurors were seated.
Now, the bailiff will read the original charges against Nathan Stone, the testimonies, and the sentence imposed.
Objection! The original witnesses are present, and prosecution believes they should, for the sake of accuracy, testify again.
Denied. This court has the right to hear the testimonies that sent this man to prison. Is the prosecution implying that the original testimonies might have been in error?
Well, of course not, Your Honor.
Very well. The bailiff will read as so instructed.
The bailiff read the transcript, ending with the sentence imposed.
Now, read the testimony of the defendant, Nathan Stone.
Nathan's brief testimony was read. It included repeated objections of the prosecution.
I am hearing objections by the prosecution, but not a word from Mr. Stone's counsel seeking to deny those objections. Why?
Judge, why don't you allow Nathan Stone to answer that?
Objection!
Overruled. Mr. Stone, approach the bench.
Nathan did so, looking Judge Travis in the eye.
Where was your counsel, Mr. Stone?
You're looking at him, Judge.
Did you choose to speak in your own defense, or were you denied counsel?
I was denied counsel, Judge. I asked to send a telegram, and I was denied that as well.
You may be seated.
The judge then fixed his stern eyes on the prosecutor, and Ackerman got hastily to his feet.
Judge, the evidence was overwhelming. We didn't think that...
You are exactly right. You certainly did not think. Be seated. We're going to hear from the defense. Mr. Silver, approach the bench.
Silver got up, approached the bench, and stood facing the judge.
Mr. Silver, in a brief opening statement, tell this court what you expect to prove. You may then present any new evidence or call witnesses.
Instead of speaking to the judge, Silver turned to face the jury.
Gentlemen of the jury, I can prove that Nathan Stone had nothing to do with that bank robbery, that he was riding west and stumbled onto their camp. Two of the robbers were in camp, one of them wounded. Stone traded shots with the men, killing one. The other escaped, and from somewhere behind Stone, the third robber shot him in the back. Two of the robbers then escaped, one of them leading the dead man's horse. The other man led Stone's horse, and the two rode away with the money stolen from the bank.
Objection! Counsel for the defense is speculating.
Overruled.
Judge, I have used these preliminary remarks to set the stage for an accusation I am about to make. According to the testimony of Sheriff Oscar Littlefield, two of the bank robbers were wounded in the chase, having been shot from behind. However, Nathan Stone is prepared to testify that he was facing the man who fired at him, that he returned the fire, killing the man. What kind of lawman looks at a dead man and doesn't bother to determine if he was shot from front or back?
Does the prosecution care to comment on that?
Judge, both men had been wounded in the chase. I'm sure Sheriff Littlefield just assumed that there was...
You don't send a man to prison based on anybody's assumption. You may continue, Mr. Silver.
When Stone was found wounded near the outlaw camp, the sheriff and his posse apparently made no further effort to trail the robbers who escaped. If they had, it wouldn't have been too difficult to find the tracks of four horses, one of them belonging to Nathan Stone.
Your Honor, there was a storm, and the trail was...
Mr. Ackerman, you are out of order. Another such outburst, and I'll declare you in contempt of court.
Your Honor, the storm in question didn't wash out the trail until well after dark. In fact, the sheriff and his posse had returned to town well before the rain began. While Sheriff Littlefield seems to have forgotten that, most of the men who rode in that posse are here, and I believe we can jog their memories under oath.
Do you have anything to say to that, Mr. Ackerman?
There was little use in pursuing a trail soon to be lost. The sheriff had two of the bank robbers, one of them dead. There were three to start with, and it was safe to assume...
It's never safe to assume anything, Mr. Ackerman, when false assumptions send a man to prison unjustly.
An eyewitness, one of the tellers, testified that Stone was in the bank. Are you calling that an assumption, too?
No. I'm calling that a carefully calculated lie to save Sheriff Littlefield's reputation.
to justify sending an innocent man to Huntsville prison.
That's a damn lie! You can't prove it!
Mr. Prosecutor, I am declaring you in contempt of this court and fining you $50. You will pay before you depart. And if I am forced to declare you in contempt a second time, I'll have you jailed. Mr. Silver, you may continue.
I'd hoped this wouldn't be necessary, but since it is, then I'll make it easy as I can on the parties involved. 23 years ago, Oscar Littlefield had an affair with a woman whose name was Eva Montgomery. She's long dead, and I mention her only to prove the truth of what I'm about to say. Eva had a son, Oscar Littlefield's son. To Littlefield's credit, he helped with the boy as best he could. When the boy was barely 18, Oscar Littlefield got him a job as a bank teller. This son of Littlefield, Stuart Montgomery, is the teller who identified Nathan Stone as one of the bank robbers. If I must, I can call Stuart to the stand, put him under oath.
But the truth of Silver's accusation was immediately evident when the white-faced young man in question leaped to his feet and ran for the door and out of the courtroom.
Mr. Ackerman, have you anything to say?
Your Honor, I knew nothing of this. I don't know what to say.
Then take your seat. Gentlemen of the jury, it's time to retire and reach a verdict. Shall this man be returned to prison based on original evidence, or should the court set him free?
We all agree, Judge. Set him free.
Nathan Stone, you are free to go. I regret that I can offer you nothing on behalf of the state of Texas, but an apology.
Judge Travis left the bench. People Nathan didn't know wrung his hand and slapped him on the back. Texas Rangers, their faith in him vindicated, surrounded him. Finally, he was able to speak to Ben Thompson and King Fisher. Nathan didn't get a chance to speak to Silver, Harley, Vivian, or the McQueens until he finally escaped the courtroom. He was barely down the courthouse steps when Empty came romping toward him. Nathan knelt, ruffling the dog's ears, and when he eventually got loose, he kissed Vivian long and hard. That done, he turned to Bess McQueen with the same treatment. Harley and Silver smiled.
I won't hold it against you if we just shake hands.
Well, that's kind of how I feel.
Nathan, now that you're free, what's the first thing you'd like to do?
Order me some grub that I don't have to eat off a tin tray, but I'll need to get out of these prison clothes.
I thought of that. I have the clothes you were wearing when you went to Huntsville. They're in my saddlebag. Your Winchester and Colts are in my office in Houston.
I'm obliged, Captain Dillard. I can get another horse, but those weapons were given to me by Captain Sage Jennings. I wouldn't part with them for any price.
I don't blame you. I'll get your clothes from my saddlebag. I think there's a cloakroom in the courthouse where you can change.
Nathan bought another horse and saddle in Austin. A Gruya, it was much like the one he had lost to the bank robbers. Reaching the Ranger outpost in Houston, Nathan belted on his twin Colts.
You're looking like Nathan Stone again.
I'm starting to feel a little like him.
I want you to spend Christmas with us in New Orleans.
Maybe I will, Barnabas. Silver, why don't you join us?
I could never plan that far ahead. We'll have to wait and see. I'd like to watch that black horse run, though.
New Orleans, July 25th, 1879. Back at the McQueen place, roaming the woods with Empty and enjoying plenty of good food, Nathan put all thought of Huntsville prison behind him. He began practicing with his Colts, quickly recovering his skill and speed. But as much as he thought of the McQueens, and despite the fact that Vivian seemed to have found a home, Nathan became restless. While he consistently won money on Diablo, he became weary of horse racing and seldom shared Vivian's excitement. When Barnabas began making plans for races in the spring of the next year, Nathan made up his mind. One day when they were alone, he spoke to Barnabas.
Barnabas, there's nowhere I'd rather be than right here for a while. But come the first of the year, I'll be riding on.
Well, I understand. What about Vivian?
I want her to stay here with you and continue to do what she's doing.
Have you spoke to her about it?
No, and I don't know exactly how to suggest it. Do you?
Well, maybe. I took a liking to Harley and suggested that he leave the railroad and throw in with us. Neither of us said anything to Vivian. No point in it unless he's made up his mind.
That might be the answer. Working for the railroad, Harley's gone a lot, and Vivian isn't comfortable in a railroad town. That's why I've kept her with me.
The last day of August, Harley Stafford rode into the McQueen place. At the supper table, he explained what he had in mind.
While we were in Houston, Barnabas invited me to get into horse racing, and I've decided to do it. I've resigned from the railroad, and I have enough money saved to buy a couple more horses.
You won't need any more horses. Use the money to hire yourselves a rider. When Nathan goes, I'm going with him.
Harley looked helplessly at Barnabas, while Vivian turned questioning eyes on Nathan. Bess wisely retired to the kitchen. Supper ended on a sour note, and when they retired to their quarters for the night, Nathan expected a tirade from Vivian. She didn't disappoint him.
Just whose idea was this? If you don't want me riding with you, then you could have just said so. You didn't have to drag Harley into it.
Damn it, Barnabas told me he had suggested this to Harley, but never once did I think Harley would actually do it. When he rode in today, it was as much a surprise to me as it was to you. I told you, once Barnabas learned you could ride Diablo, he wouldn't want you to leave.
Yes, you did, but I didn't expect him to go this far. Now what are we going to do?
I believe you should talk to Harley. Despite what you think of Barnabas, I doubt he could have talked Harley into it if Harley wasn't interested. One thing that I'm sure of, where Harley's concerned, he's still carrying a load of guilt for having left you in Virginia when he came west. I'm not sure that isn't part of his reason for accepting this proposal from Barnabas. Harley's concern for you is genuine, and even if that's his purpose for accepting McQueen's offer, you shouldn't be too hard on him.
I know he feels guilty, and if I thought Barnabas really wanted him here...
You think Barnabas is luring Harley here, so you'll stay.
Yes, I can't help it. How do you feel?
Barnabas McQueen's one of the best friends I have in this world, but I'd have to agree with you. I've only been out of prison 6 weeks, and I'm already restless. Barnabas knows I'll be riding out, and it's not in his best interest for you to ride with me.
But it's not fair to me, and it's not fair to Harley. It's not fair to me because he's using Harley to try to keep me here, and it's not fair to Harley because Barnabas doesn't really need Harley. I believe Harley's being used to keep me here, and I don't like thinking of what it may do to him when he figures it out.
Whether you stay or not, suppose Barnabas really wants Harley here. Suppose he has plans for Harley. Would that change the way you feel?
Perhaps. But how are we to know?
I'll talk to Barnabas and tell him how you feel. He'll understand and respect your feelings. If Harley's gone to bed, I'll talk to Barnabas tonight.
Nathan found Barnabas and Bess still at the kitchen table. Harley was absent. Nathan sat down and repeated to Barnabas what Vivian had told him.
Is that all that's bothering her? Harley made me promise not to say anything to her until he's had a chance to talk to her, and he's going to do that in the morning.
Just to satisfy my curiosity, what are your plans for Harley?
Harley's going to ride those two horses we brought back from San Antonio. He's tall and lanky enough to ride without a saddle, and he only weighs 150 pounds. Harley rode with us to Houston for your trial, and I learned something about him that I don't believe you and Vivian have noticed. Harley has that same touch with horses that Vivian does. By the time we reached Houston, Harley had made friends with Diablo. You know how long I've had that horse, and he just tolerates me. Give Harley Stafford a week or so, and he'll be riding Diablo. I don't know what the man has, but he's a natural with horses. I think the world of Vivian, but if she doesn't want to stay, then I believe Harley can take up the slack. I am to prove it to her. On the 4th and 5th of October, there are races in Beaumont. I'm planning for Vivian to ride Diablo in the Saturday race, but on Sunday, Harley will be riding Patalo, one of the horses we brought back from San Antonio.
And this is what Harley aims to tell Vivian?
Yes, among other things. By the time you're ready to ride out, I'll have convinced Vivian that my invitation to Harley is honest, and I expect she will have learned something about him that she didn't know.
And something I didn't know. Vivian showed up in Dodge, broken, half-starved, and I promised to help her find Harley. When we finally did, in Deadwood, Harley was on the bottle, bitter and hating everybody. Not until he was shot up in a stage robbery did he begin to change.
Well, I don't care what he was. He has a feel for horses, and if I'm any judge, he's going to make a name for himself as a rider.
I appreciate you telling me this. I won't repeat any of it to Vivian unless Harley has trouble convincing her.
Nathan found Vivian sitting on the bed where he had left her.
Well, Barnabas has convinced me, and Harley's going to talk to you in the morning. I think you're in for a pleasant surprise. Now, will you go to bed, or do you aim to sit there and sulk?
Maybe I'll just sit here and sulk. If you ride out without me, you'll be sleeping by yourself, so you might as well get used to it.
Nathan blew out the lamp. The next morning after breakfast, Nathan and the McQueens left Harley and Vivian at the table.
Ooh, I hope they can reach some agreement. I hate seeing them on the outs with one another, us being the cause of it.
You're not the cause of it, Bess. Harley's doing what he wants to do, and from what Barnabas told me, he's fully justified. But I'm not sure Vivian will believe him.
She'll believe her own eyes. After dinner, Harley's going to prove to her he can ride.
He's going to ride Patalo, then?
Patalo and Modelo. But first, he's going to ride Diablo.
Harley didn't look all that confident when he came into the parlor.
Well?
She still has her doubts. I'm going to have to prove myself.
After dinner, they went to the horse barn. Vivian led Diablo, Barnabas led Patalo, and Harley led Modelo. Nathan and Bess followed. The horses were led to an open field, to a cleared stretch where Vivian often rode Diablo. Without a word, Harley passed Modelo's reins to Barnabas and turned to Vivian.
I told you what I aim to do. You still haven't told me what you think.
I think you're going to break your neck.
Harley took Diablo's reins from Vivian. Very slowly, he approached the horse, and Diablo didn't move, even when Harley placed his hand on the horse's lean neck. Suddenly, Harley vaulted onto Diablo's back. The horse broke into a fast gallop as Harley leaned forward, his lanky legs keeping him upright and steady. Just before reaching the woods, Harley wheeled the horse, and Diablo came galloping back. Harley slid off, his arm around Diablo's neck, grinning at Vivian.
Riding him across a field is one thing. Winning a race with him might not be so easy.
Oh, I don't intend to ride Diablo as long as you're here. I just want you to know that I can, and that I'm not here to help Barnabas hold on to you. October 5th at Beaumont, I'll be riding Patalo. We're going to win. You want to see me ride him now?
No, I've had enough of your showing off for one day.
Vivian took Diablo's reins and went stomping back toward the horse barn. Barnabas winked at Harley.
Shame on the two of you baiting her like that.
When it comes to women, there's just a thin line between heaven and hell, and from one day to the next, a man never knows which side of the line he's likely to be on.
Well, I feel a little guilty. She's found something she enjoys, something she can do well, and now I'm horning in. She resents that. I won't be surprised if she leaves with Nathan just to spite me.
Well, if she does, so be it. There's room for both of you. Horse racing is becoming so popular, there's going to be more and more two-day events. Perhaps Vivian will better understand that after the races at Beaumont.
Beaumont, Texas, October 4th, 1879. Vivian said very little in the days that followed. Barnabas insisted on arriving early on Thursday, although the first race wasn't scheduled until 2 o'clock Saturday afternoon. To escape the silent Vivian for a while, Nathan and Harley visited some of the town's saloons. They were about to enter a place called the Blue Moon when Nathan turned away.
What is it?
The Gruya there at the hitch rail. That's the horse I was riding when I stumbled onto those bank robbers.
How can you be sure? There's plenty of Gruyas around. You're riding one.
Those saddlebags. They have silver buckles and they came from old Mexico. King Fisher gave them to me. King's brand, a K inside a crown, is burned into the leather beneath one of the flaps. Let's have a look.
Nathan unbuckled one of the flaps, revealing King Fisher's brand.
Well, by God. All we gotta do is wait until that coyote heads for the horse and you've got one of them.
They could still be together. I'd like to take them alive, wire Captain Dillard, and have the bastards sent to Huntsville.
Given a choice, they ain't likely to give up without a fight. Maybe if we both throw down on them, it won't end up in a shootout.
This is not your fight, Harley.
Maybe not, but if there's two of them, I'm buying in.
They waited 3/4 of an hour. Nathan grew impatient.
I'm going inside and challenge the varmint riding that Gruya. He could have left the horse here and gone somewhere else.
Then I'm going with you.
If you're going, go in first. Go to the bar and order a beer. I'll call out the man riding the Gruya. If there's two of them and they both decide to fight, then one of them is yours. There's just the one man, stay out of it.
You're calling the shots.
Nathan waited, counting slowly to 100. He then entered the saloon, allowing his eyes to adjust to the lamp-lit interior before making his move. He counted 9 men. 4 of them sat at a table playing poker. 2 were at a table in the corner, and 3, one of them, Harley, stood at the bar, facing the door.
I want some talk with the gent riding the Gruya, the one toting fancy saddlebags with silver buckles.
One of the 2 men at the corner table stood up.
What might you be wanting with him?
I'd be wanting him to show me a bill of sale. That's my horse.
I'll meet you outside then.
Go ahead, I'll be right behind you.
He headed for the door, a little too readily. As a shot rang out behind them, the man ahead of Nathan turned on him, his hand streaking for his Colt. Nathan seized the wrist with his left hand and slammed his right fist into the antagonist's jaw. Only then did Nathan turn to see what had happened behind him. The second man at the table stood beside it, blood soaking the right shoulder of his shirt.
He was about to shoot you in the back.
Within minutes, a man with a star on his shirt and a shotgun in the crook of his arm entered the saloon.
These hombres, the one on the floor and the one dripping blood, are wanted for bank robbery in Houston. I want them locked up in a telegram sent to Captain Dillard at the Ranger outpost.
I'm Lytle Hayes. I'm just a deputy. We'll have to talk to Waddy McLean, the sheriff.
I'll talk to him, but I'm taking this pair of coyotes with me.
Nathan, Harley, and Hayes walked down to the sheriff's office, the pair of bank robbers in tow.
Waddy, these hombres with Colts drawn have a story for you. The Jaspers, they're covering started some gunplay in the Blue Moon. Something having to do with the bank robbery in Houston?
Uh-huh. Well, for the time being, until I get some facts, lock those 2 in a cell and fetch a doc for the one that's bleeding.
When the 2 men had been locked in a cell and Hayes had gone for a doctor, Nathan told his story, leaving out nothing.
I don't remember the robbery of the original trial, but I do recall the new trial in Austin. So you're the gent that was railroaded into Huntsville.
Yes, and that's why I didn't just shoot those 2 varmints we just marched in here. I want them to take their turn in Huntsville.
Well, I can't say I blame you, but there is a matter of proof.
That's why I want you to telegraph Captain Dillard at the Ranger outpost. I want this pair taken back to Houston so those bank tellers can have a look at them.
I can't hold them even overnight without some charges. Suspicion of a 2-year-old bank robbery won't be enough.
Well, hell, hold them for attempted murder. If I hadn't plugged the one that's bleeding, he'd have shot Nathan in the back.
I can do that. I won't bother questioning them. If they're guilty, as you say, the crime's out of my jurisdiction. It's a job for the Rangers. I'll send that telegram to Houston.
Nathan and Harley waited, and while McLean was gone, Deputy Hayes returned with a doctor to attend the wounded man. The sheriff was gone for an hour, but when he returned, he had a reply from Captain Dillard.
There's something in here for you.
McLean passed the message to Nathan.
Hold suspects on suspicion of bank robbery. Rangers coming for them October 6th. Suggest Stone return to Houston. Are you answering this telegram, Sheriff?
Already did. Told him I'd hold these gents for the Rangers.
Then I'll telegraph him. Come on, Harley.
I reckon we better find Barnabas and tell him we'll be riding on to Houston.
You don't have to go.
I reckon I do. I can testify that both them varmints was ready to fill you full of lead. Why would they have tried that if they wasn't guilty as hell?
You have a point. Reason enough for you to ride along.
I've got a better reason than that. Me and old Patalo is going to win that race on Sunday, and Vivian will likely sulk all the way back to New Orleans.
There were only 9 entries in Saturday's race, and the favored horse was a dun whose name was Jackrabbit. Vivian seemed preoccupied and had little to say.
Vivian, are you all right?
Of course I'm all right. Why wouldn't I be?
She ain't all right. She's still on the prod. If I'm any judge, Diablo's going to pick up on her mood. Don't bet your money on this one.
Diablo came in a poor third. Vivian sat there white-faced, as though in shock. And as Nathan tried to help her dismount, she fought free of him.
Leave me be!
Harley led Diablo away to be rubbed down. Nathan glared at Vivian in disgust.
So I lost. Why don't you shoot me?
Yeah, that would be too easy on you. You've had a burr under your tail entirely too long. You might as well get used to losing until you improve your rotten disposition. The horse senses your mood, and as long as you don't give a damn, neither will he.
Vivian refused supper and went to bed. The McQueens were in a somber mood, and to escape them, Nathan and Harley made the rounds of the saloons in Beaumont. They sat in on a poker game and came out winners. Nathan with 200 and Harley with 125.
Maybe we ought to just play poker all night.
I wouldn't blame you in the slightest.
Don't be too hard on her. She knows she's being unreasonable as hell, but her pride won't let her back down.
That's where I was when you found me in Deadwood, drinking myself into an early grave, wrapped in pride. I was a pitiful package, riding shotgun for grub and a place to sleep. When I was gunned down in a stage holdup and laying there more dead than alive, I changed my mind about a lot of things.
I think Vivian's being pulled in two different directions. Her pride is telling her she belongs with me, while her common sense disagrees. Deep down, she knows, just as I do, that someday I'm going to run headlong into a slug with my name on it. She has a future with Barnabas, none with me.
So if she loses enough races for Barnabas, she reckons he'll run her off, forcing her to ride with you.
I'm guessing, but that's how it looks to me. I reckon it's got to reach the point where she no longer seems to have a choice, that Barnabas might show her the gate whether she wants to go or not. You need to win that race tomorrow and as many more as you can within the next few weeks.
There were 10 horses in the race, and Patalo, an unknown, would be running against long odds. An hour before the race started, they were 15-1.
I've got $1,000 on him.
Barnabas, it being his first race, do you think that's wise?
Maybe not, Bess, but not for reasons you suggest. You know Patalo can win. But you have doubts about Harley.
Oh, I don't know who I doubt. Whether it's Harley, Patalo, or the both of them. Mostly, if they win, I fear what it may do to Vivian.
The favorite was a gray horse whose name was Caliente. The horse took the lead quickly, with intentions of widening it, but Patalo was only a length behind. Harley leaned forward on the horse's neck, and Patalo began gaining. The two went into the final stretch neck and neck, but Patalo slowly but surely pulled ahead, winning by half a length. When Patalo had been rubbed down and stabled, Nathan, Harley, and McQueen went to collect their winnings. When they returned to their hotel, Nathan found Bess in the room he shared with Vivian.
I was just leaving.
I reckon Harley's satisfied any doubts you've had about him being here?
Yes.
Then you have no reason for being angry with Barnabas and Harley, do you?
No.
Vivian, come here.
When she finally faced him, tears were creeping down her cheeks. Slowly she came to him and buried her face on his shoulder. Removing only her hat, he stretched her out on the bed and lay down beside her.
Now talk, damn it. What's really biting you?
I can't tell you.
Well, then I'll tell you. You want to go with me, yet you want to stay here and ride Diablo, but you want someone else to make up your mind for you. You want to be forced into one or the other, don't you?
Yes. I've never wanted anything as much as I want to continue racing, but I don't want to lose you.
You won't lose me. I'm never away more than a few months. I always come here to heal and lick my wounds.
Until that day when you'll never come back to me.
When that day comes, there'll be nothing anyone can do, for destiny deals the cards. If I never ride back, then you'll know that I'm resting easy knowing you're with Harley and among friends. Can't you accept that?
Perhaps someday, but not now.
Breakfast was a happy affair, as Vivian attempted to get back on the good side of everybody.
I've been behaving like a selfish, spoiled brat, and
you sure as hell have. Try that again, and I'll take a switch to you.
Harley! I can't say that I won't ever do it again, but I'm apologizing for this time. I just hope Diablo will forgive me.
You'll find horses more forgiving than people. Ride him with a kind hand, confidence, and determination, and he'll run his heart out for you.
Houston, October 7th, 1879. Nathan was in Captain Dillard's office.
Their names are Lonzo Prinz and Roof Collins. While neither has a record, they were once arrested on suspicion of bank robbery and released for lack of evidence. It was Collins who tried to backshoot you, Nathan.
I realize them having my horse and saddlebags won't be enough to convict them. There must be some way of forcing them to talk.
So far, nothing beyond their names. In the morning, the bank tellers who were on duty at the time of the robbery will have a look at these two.
Does that include Sheriff Littlefield's son, who identified me?
No. After his relationship to Littlefield came to light in Austin, he left the bank. Nobody knows where he is. We could have tracked him down, maybe convicted him of perjury, but you were set free. We believe justice had been done.
When Nathan and Harley reached the jail the following morning, Captain Dillard was already there. Sheriff Littlefield nodded to Nathan and Harley. When the tellers arrived, McDaniel, Terrell, and Wilkerson, they were brought in front of the prisoners. Prinz and Collins sat on their bunks, staring at the men in the jail corridor. Terrell nodded at one of the men.
The man with the bandaged arm, I'd like a closer look at him.
Collins, come over here.
Collins got up and shambled over to the cell's barred door.
He has a broken nose and a mole above his left eyebrow. I'd say this is the man who took money from me during the robbery.
You'd swear to that in court?
Yes.
Collins, you've been identified as one of the men who held up a Houston bank 2 years ago. What do you have to say for yourself?
I didn't do it.
We have evidence enough to hold you. It'll be up to you to convince a judge and jury that you're innocent.
You got nothing against me. Let me out of here.
Too late, Prinz realized his mistake. Collins turned on him, his face a mask of fury.
Damn you! You was right there with me, just like in Waco!
Prinz came off his bunk and slammed Collins against the bars of the cell. Dillard drew his Colt.
Back off, Prinz.
Prinz returned to his bunk and sat down.
Sheriff, take Collins out of there and lock him in another cell. I believe he'll be a valuable witness, and we don't want Prinz trying to influence him.
The next morning, preparing to return to New Orleans, Nathan and Harley stopped to talk to Captain Dillard.
Collins refused to take the blame by himself. He implicated Prinz as well as Short, the man you shot, Nathan. In fact, Collins sang loud enough to convict the two of them for a similar bank robbery in Waco 3 years ago. We lost him there for lack of evidence, so this promises to be a particularly sweet victory. On behalf of the Rangers, I want to commend both of you for capturing this pair.
I reckon I had a selfish motive. There was a time when I'd have been content to gut shoot the pair of them, but that would have been too sudden. I reckon I'll get more satisfaction out of them doing 5 years in Huntsville prison.
If they're convicted of robberies in Houston and Waco, they'll be lucky to get off with 10 years.